Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast with a new episode every day of the season. If you want to keep up to date with everything happening in the top flight of English football, then you're in the right place. Hit that subscribe button now and you won't miss a show moving forward. On today's podcast, Romelu says sorry. Lukaku placed on the naughty step at Stamford Bridge after recent comments in an interview. And now the Chelsea striker has issued a video message apologising to fans for what he said. The question is, does he mean it? Or was he forced to say sorry? We'll dive into that later, as well as whether the big man will play tonight in Chelsea's Carabao Cup semi-final first leg against London rivals Tottenham. Spurs boss Antonio Conte returning to the Bridge for the first time since leaving Chelsea, and the Italian allegedly still isn't clear on his side's approach to the January transfer window. More on that suggestion and that game shortly. Plus, Scholak has gone marching into Southampton. The Serbian media mogul has bought 80% of the Premier League club for £100 million. But what does this mean for the future of Southampton? I'm Niall. Welcome along to the show. This is Football Social Daily. And joining me today, we've got Ian Brandon. Happy New Year, Ian.
Happy New Year. Yes, here we are back for another year of newness, except with the same things.
Oh, I mean, talking of the same things, you haven't picked out any New Year's resolutions then, by the sounds of it?
No, I don't really go for New Year's resolutions. I've realised that sort of by this stage of the year, it only leads to disappointment because you can't stick to them. So
I'm just what, excited. 5 days in?
Yeah.
By this stage of the year, 5 days in.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, dry January lasted until about, 3 minutes past midnight. I'm looking forward to the, you know, I think everything gets bogged down, I think, getting into Christmas, doesn't it? You sort of concentrating on getting presents and all planning and all these parties and all these things you have to go to, the pressure of
that must have been all that one.
And then, you know, get into the new year and it's, you know, the whole new year is fresh, and, you know, look forward to all that's to come.
We've got a great soundbite from this podcast already. Ian Brennan lasts 3 minutes. That's all we need to put out. And
hey, listen, I'll take that. It's not grade on the previous.
We've also got Sports Social's Joel Tudor. Happy New Year to you as well, Joel. What about you? Can you proclaim to do something that Ian hasn't and provide us with some New Year's resolutions?
I don't know about 3 minutes, but it's a nice fresh morning. I think one of my resolutions was to eat less crap, and then 3 minutes past midnight we had a doner kebab. So yeah, I'm in the same boat as Ian.
Exactly, this is it. It's pointless. The whole new year thing sets you up for a fall. People saying I'm doing dry January and they're absolutely baked at midnight celebrating new year. You've already broken your resolution at the stroke of midnight.
Everyone knows it only counts on New Year's Day onwards, or as far as my case, it began yesterday. As you say, you've got a very good point. Speaking of January, it's going to be a tough January for Chelsea. They have some massive games, including one tonight against Tottenham in the Carabao Cup semi-finals. It's the first leg taking place this evening at Stamford Bridge, but we'll come on to that shortly, because first we're going to take a look at Romelu Lukaku. Yesterday we mentioned him on the podcast after some interesting comments in an interview with Sky Sports Italy about his time at Chelsea so far. The Blues paid £95 million for him in the summer. He's only been there 4 months and it already sounded like he wanted out of the club. Since then, he's issued an apology via the Chelsea social media channels, and he said to the fans that he really is sorry for his recent comments in that interview. First and foremost, Joel, do you think that was the right thing to do for Romelu Lukaku to come out and say sorry? Because there's no question that he did upset a number of Chelsea fans with what he said.
Well, I'm 100% positive that he's not come out and apologised on his own back. 100%. I mean, judging by the reaction of Thomas Tuchel, of all the Chelsea fans, the media, this was something that has caused, I'm sure, a big backlash, not only just for what we can see, but also amongst the squad as well. I imagine that a lot of his teammates are looking at him in a different way following that interview. Obviously, for people who've not seen it, it was pretty much Lukaku just flirting with Inter Milan again about wanting to go back and how much he loved his time in Italy, and how beautiful the San Siro's pitch is and the grass smells so fresh like Amarena cherries. I mean, he was dying to go back apparently in this interview, and let's not forget he's just joined Chelsea not around 6 months ago for £100 million. So it's quite, for me, it was very strange. And I've got a few friends in Milan who are Inter supporters, and I asked them what they think about it, and they were pretty much on the fence a little bit, because obviously he's very much an icon in Milan, I would say, purely because he brought back the Scudetto to Milan after 10 years, and they're idolising, they put murals around in Milan. He's probably the biggest striker that they've loved since Adriano back in 05. But they think it's very circumstantial in terms of, would he come out and said this interview if his situation at Chelsea was a little bit different? For me, when I saw the interview, I didn't think it was that bad, because he obviously had been out with an injury for quite a while. He just come back into the side pretty briefly. But it seems as though there's more than meets the eye. But I think in that video, he looked like he was being held hostage. I'm pretty sure there was about five Russian guys holding a shotgun to his head saying, read the script. I don't want to hear no Milan. I don't want to hear no Inter talk in this interview. But he's
Roman 100% Abramovich before. Behind the camera.
Oh, 100%. He's got all of his wingmen and hitmen out there. But I think he was 100% forced, and I think it was needed, because he doesn't... I think Thomas Tuchel is also protecting Lukaku's interests. He doesn't want the situation to just be ended on him making comments on Lukaku in a press conference, and the Chelsea fans literally mauling him when he comes back to Stamford Bridge. He wants to nip it in a bud. But, you know, it's not the first time Lukaku's done something stupid like this. I remember at Manchester United when he leaked the United speed sheet of all the players when they just came back from pre-season. I think it embarrassed a few of them. And you know, it just creates unnecessary spotlight. But the thing that made me most surprised about it was the fact that a return was never ever on the cards, because when Inter actually let him go, it was because the owner, Steven Zhang, who's the shareholder and the owner of the Suning Group in China, who, you know, they can be under financial difficulties for the last 2 years, he had to offload obviously the likes of Conte, Hakimi, Ashraf, and Lukaku, obviously, for 100 million, because they needed to raise funds. So it was never on the cards for a return regardless. So that's why I'm so surprised that 5 months, 6 months into his probably one of the biggest contracts Chelsea have ever handed out, I'm so surprised that he's come out with it now of all times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a massive story. I think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup situation where, you know, he's nipped it in the bud now, it's fine. But I mean, it clearly shows you that there's an agenda there for Lukaku. He's not happy with the situation, but like the people who I've been speaking to in Italy, they think it's very, very circumstantial. And of course, he wouldn't have come out with his interview if he was happy with the situation at Chelsea.
Well, we mentioned this on yesterday's podcast. We said that it's a bit strange that Lukaku doesn't seem happy, and he actually threw Thomas Tuchel under the bus and said that the system doesn't suit him and he's not enjoying his time at Chelsea. And sometimes you see these interviews done in a foreign language, they can be misquoted and mistranslated, but it's not like he's been terrible since he's arrived at Chelsea. He did go through a bit of a goal drought, but also he was injured for about 6 weeks. He scored goals in recent games as well. He scored against Aston Villa, he scored against Arsenal, he started the season well. So it's not like he's been a complete flop. So that's an interesting narrative. How about you, Ian? What's your take? Joel says that it felt a little bit forced and that maybe Roman Abramovich was kind of in his ear as if to say, you need to apologise here, Romelu. Do you think it felt sincere? What's your take?
My name is Romelu Lukaku. I am here to say that I am safe. I have been fed. My captors are treating me very well. It was very much like that. I mean, he
like a hostage video.
A little bit. But it was like, it obviously was, you know, staged, forced as part of the apology, you know, maybe part of the humiliation, if you will, to be sort of paraded in front of the fans, to sort of be forced to apologise rather than just hide behind a statement. So I kind of see probably where they're coming from with it. But to me, it sort of posed more questions than it did answers. You know, he's sort of digging himself even deeper into what was already a fairly large hole in parts of it. And he's sort of saying, well, you know, it wasn't the right time. I shouldn't have said that then. But he hasn't really fully apologised. He's sort of standing by what he said in parts of his new statement, where he's come to clear the air by basically saying, well, yeah, I kind of did mean bits of it, but I shouldn't have said it. You know what I mean? Mm. So it's not like he's been misquoted or denying any of it. And I don't know, but then when you... I've just watched the original video that this all stemmed from again. And
you know, watching that, where he's sort of saying, oh, you know, I'm sorry to go from Inter Milan and all that, he's sort of similarly as, you know, fake or vague on that as well. And yeah, he's saying all these wonderful things, but if you're an Inter Milan fan watching that, do you believe him? You know, back then, do you believe that he really wants to come back and all this? I don't know. Is he just saying what he thinks people want to hear?
Well, it's interesting for me, because we often talk about how footballers are boring and bland in post-match interviews and they never speak their mind, whereas this seems a case of someone who does speak their mind and is quite happy to stand by it, as you said. So I guess in an element, it's kind of refreshing, but I guess you could also argue it's only refreshing when the player says what you want to hear, and this wasn't the case for Chelsea fans.
Well, that's it, you know, and it's a question. Is he saying what he's hoping the fans of that club want to hear? Because he's doing an interview with, you know, Inter Milan, you know, Milan journalists for Inter Milan fans. Is he wanting to sort of play to that crowd, but just being a bit thick and not thinking that actually this is going to get translated and people around the world are going to listen to it and say what I've said? Or are those his genuine views? I mean, but on the other hand, what's the harm in a player maybe saying what their ambitions are? You know, we've all worked in jobs where we've not minded the job and enjoyed the job, but it's not our dream job, and we have got better.
To be fair, though,
aims.
Lukaku has said this is his dream club, and then 5 months later, yes. Inter Milan is suddenly the dream club.
Yeah. Well, there is that,
and he even mentioned clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona in that interview as well. So it all seems a little bit wishy-washy to me. It's a bit strange.
Do you know
strange.
What? I just think he's a bit dense. You know that he just doesn't think these things through. I think that's where it is. He's just bibbling on about all these great things and, you know, verbal diarrhea coming out of him, and he doesn't think of the impact that that has with fans. I think that's all it is. And yeah, I just think it. You know, footballers, they're not known for being, you know, regular members of Mensa, are they? And I think this is probably the thing. He's a fantastic footballer. The only way he can apologise for this is to have a storming rest of the season, and starting with tonight, of course, which we'll talk about later.
Do you think we will, though, Ian? Do you think we'll see a more determined Lukaku after this? Because Joel made an interesting point suggesting that some people are arguing that an apology wasn't even really necessary, because Thomas Tuchel was keen to nip it in the bud in a press conference, but Chelsea have gone ahead and said, no, we need to do a video apology. And Lukaku has done one. We don't know whether that's off his own back or whether he was asked to by the club and the powers that be. But do you think that now, off the back of this, we will see a more determined Romelu Lukaku? Because the way he's impacted games recently, coming off the bench, I can think in particular that game around Christmas against Aston Villa, where he came on at half-time and just completely bulldozed his way through the Villa defence. He bullied Tyrone Mings, who's a full England international. Do you think we will see now a Lukaku with a bit more grit and determination to kind of prove those critics wrong?
Well, it's going to have to, because I think with, you know, if you're a player and you put yourself in this position, I mean, Lukaku, I mean, last time I saw Lukaku play, he was playing for Everton against Sunderland, which tells you how long ago it was. And he was not, and it was a game Everton needed to win. He just was not interested. And of course, shortly after that, he went to Manchester United, I think. And it, maybe that deal was already, you know, done, and couldn't be bothered. And, you know, he does seem to be a little bit moody when it comes to that kind of thing. And, you know, one of these players that plays on his own terms. But if you've managed to get yourself in a position where you're valued by a club at 100 million quid, you know, great responsibility surely comes with that. And, you know, he can't be let off the hook in the same way, or in a different way to say a youngster would be, who would be slagging Chelsea off, because they'd be straight out. So obviously Chelsea need to protect their investment, but to also be an example to the younger players in the side, they've got to make an example of him some way. And the only way he can now show, you know, I'm sure the conversation somewhere along the line is, look, we've paid 100 million quid for you. You are one of the highest paid footballers in the world at this club right now. Stop touting yourself about for better gigs because you've got a good gig, right? Start delivering on the pitch. That's what they're, you know, surely that has been a conversation from Tuchel. We need you. Because if they weren't interested in him, they've got their perfect out now, haven't they? They can offload him in this transfer window right now.
I think part of it is that, you know, Lukaku knows that he's Chelsea's best forward player. He knows that. And I think that's why he feels he can get away with saying some of the things he said. And, you know, Thomas Tuchel, you're right, had to make an example of him, and he dropped him for the Liverpool game, which finished 2-2, but that was one of the biggest games of Chelsea's season. But now you look at the month ahead, which we'll come on to when we talk about tonight's game between the Blues and Tottenham in the Carabao Cup. They've got those two legs of that semi-final against Spurs. Then they've got Spurs in the Premier League. They've got a Premier League game against Man City. They've got the Club World Cup. They need Romelu Lukaku. So I think it's important that this situation does get sorted out sooner rather than later. And that appears to have been the case, as Lukaku has issued a video apology via the Chelsea social media channels. Do you believe him? That's the question. Why don't you let us know on our social media channels, at The Sports Social on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram, at Sports Social Official, at Sports Social Official. And if you're on Facebook, just search in the search bar for Sports Social and you'll find us there. Time to move on now, and we'll have a quick break before we talk about Southampton, who have got new owners in town. A Serbian businessman, Dragan Šolak, has bought the club. We'll talk about that next here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social, and Southampton have new owners in town. Serbian media mogul Dragan Šolak has bought an 80% stake in the club. The previous shareholder was a Chinese businessman called Zhao Jisheng, who was looking to sell the club for a number of years. It was around about the time, I think 2017, when he first went into the South Coast club and invested, and the Chinese government were at the time keen for their business people to invest in overseas sports clubs. And that plan has kind of deteriorated over time. And so he's actually been looking to sell the club for about 3 or 4 years. He's not invested much money, but now he's sold his 80% share to a Serbian media mogul, Mr. Šolak. Now, Southampton are tipped to become a Red Bull-style club after this takeover, which is worth £100 million, Joel. Do you think that will work in the Premier League, having a Red Bull-style club, or do you think it will fall through?
Wow, one club for one Jack Grealish. It's crazy, isn't it, how football's going? But yeah, I think as we've seen with previous clubs, it's never good to have an owner latching on when he wants to sell the club. As we've seen, you know, with Mike Ashley for so many years and many, many other owners, when he wants to sell, he's not going to put any more investment as he would do if he wanted to keep it. So I think first and foremost, it's great news for Southampton fans, because now they're going to get owners who are actually there for the long term and actually want to invest in the side, rather than an owner who's trying to actively pull the plug and doesn't really want to put any money in his own pocket. Because, well, it's pretty logical, isn't it? If you want to get rid of a club, you're not going to keep putting millions and millions into it when you're not going to get much of it back. But looking at the forefront of the actual acquisition itself, you've got the holding group Sport Republic, who are looking to build a portfolio similar to how Sheikh Mansour kind of built up his City group. Obviously, he's bought Manchester City and then kind of extended his branches into New York City, Melbourne City. I think he's got one in China or potentially India. They're constantly branching out and making the portfolio bigger and bigger, and that's proven to be a massive success. Obviously, they've got a huge amount of money to invest into that. However, it's proven to be a success just because not only are they spreading the brand, but they're also able to just cherry pick any talented players which have kind of come through. I think Angelino was one who came through the City system as well, and obviously he's at New York Red Bulls now, Leipzig. So I think the key for success when it comes to, you know, these recruitments, these owners playing Monopoly with the little Monopoly money, is you need to have good recruitment. And with Southampton, they were, if we don't forget, they were really impressive when they had Pochettino. Every single acquisition was so well thought out when they had, you know, obviously a great, they have an amazing youth academy, full stop, in terms of bringing through, you know, Luke Shaw, Oxlade Chamberlain was there for a period, and needless to say, they have brilliant players coming through. But the recruitment was just absolutely spot on, and it seemed to kind of disappear once Pochettino left. Obviously, the appointment of Pochettino was an amazing recruitment in itself, but it seemed to kind of lose sight a little bit. And I think now that they've got owners who actually have a long-term vision, and they're there for the long run to build a big portfolio. Obviously, there are a group with a plan, which is a very different situation with regards to Newcastle, who seems to just be throwing money at everything and anything at the moment. So I think it's good for Southampton fans. I think they should be happy. It's not going to be the kind of Newcastle takeover where they can throw multi-million, 30, 40, 50 million pound signings, because that's not going to be the case. But I think for a team like Southampton, it just needs to have a very well thought out strategy, which of course has been lost with an owner who wants to sell for so many years now. But I think it's good news going forward, just because now they have people, football people, who actually want the best for the club, and it's in their own best interest as well to get the most out of it.
Yeah, I think it's a good point you raise, and actually I'm glad that you've likened it to Newcastle, or suggested that it's dissimilar to Newcastle, because I think it comes down to the expectations of fans, because there's no doubt this is an exciting time, Ian, for supporters of Southampton, seeing a new owner come in, someone who has had good press, and you know, it's never always like that when someone comes in to take over a football club. And you know, it's suggested that things will stay pretty similar for the immediate term. How do you think the takeover will change expectations for the fans, or will it at all? Because it's easy to get carried away when someone with money comes into the club, as we've seen with Newcastle United, but it isn't always as simple as that, more often than not.
If it's a quiet takeover, I think that's probably one of the better ones, rather than one of these with all the guns and whistles and fans dancing around outside the stadium with their shirts off, which is not going to happen at this time of year, surely, with the best one in the world. As with Newcastle, though, you know, the whole story and the whole sideshow, if you like, of the takeover probably detracted from what was actually happening or not with the team, you know, at the time. I think, you know, Southampton, yeah, they're not pulling up many trees, but they're not doing badly in the Premier League at the moment. You know, I think many teams would certainly take where they are in the table at the moment and, you know, ticking over nicely. We've spoke about this actually, you know, a few weeks ago. We talked about Southampton, as I recall, and I don't think either you two guys were actually on this particular podcast when we were talking about them, but we were saying that, you know, Southampton, for the amount of time that they've been in the Premier League, you would expect them to be a little bit regularly further up the table, if you know what I mean, not sort of dicing in that sort of mid-table obscurity, flirting with relegation briefly at some point in the season, but usually pulling themselves clear more often than not. And the fact
and
that they're not
beat
really
9-0 on a regular basis.
Well, yeah. Oh, no, that's why we're talking about it. We're saying, because Leeds got stuffed, didn't they, by Man City? That was it. Leeds got stuffed, and we're saying, you know, most teams will take a pound in at one point in the season in that half of the table. And look at Southampton. You know, they usually get battered by somebody, but usually more often than not, they're fine. But how they're not really built on that. They hadn't really pushed into the regular top half finishes or be flirting with the top six by now. Which, for the amount of time that Southampton have been in the Premier League, you'd think that, you know, you'd be looking to progress a little bit. And maybe this change of ownership will help fund that, because I know some of the people involved in it have had experience of running football clubs with, like, Brentford. And Brentford, as we're seeing in the Premier League, are, you know, steady away. You know, they're gradually getting there. They're not sort of spending ridiculous money and building it. And I think if you spend time building, and, you know, Leicester have been used as a good model of a club as well. You know, you build gradually, slowly but surely, but heading in the right direction with the right people. You can do it, because Leicester have proved that you can win the Premier League without spending absolute billions on players. Not to say that they haven't spent money, but, you know, nonetheless, you know what I mean? They're not paying £100 million for Romelu Lukaku to come along and slag your club off. So, you know, I don't know, time will tell, but it looks like it's not a hostile sort of takeover. They're kind of being welcomed by the fans. A bit of stability, I think, would be as good as anything else at this moment in time for Southampton to continue what they're doing. You know, their Hasenhüttl has done a reasonably decent job, I think, in many people's opinion, and just keep heading in the right direction. Rather than any sort of, I think what they know, Southampton fans will be happy because they know that he's got a decent amount of money in his back pocket. Not to say he's going to spend it all at once, but they know that this is an owner who's got cash. And I think that's probably peace of mind. Well, obviously not going to spend it straight away this transfer window, I wouldn't have thought. But they know that they've got the financial support there, rather than an owner coming in who looks like an asset stripper. You know, which you know, if you've had Ken Bates running your club, then you'll know what I mean.
Yeah, we had multiple asset strippers and crooks running our club, Portsmouth, so I know exactly what you're talking about there, Ian. In terms of that transfer kitty or budget or whatnot, I don't think we'll see it this January, as you suggest, but some of those involved in this deal were involved with Brentford in the past, and there's links to FC Midtjylland, who are almost like a sister club of Brentford. And Brentford have been applauded for their business model, Joel. It seems as if Southampton can get back to that top recruitment that they had before, like you mentioned, if they continue with the Brentford model. So in terms of coming in and spending loads of money like we're expecting the Saudis to do at Newcastle United, it doesn't feel like it'll be there. It feels like it'll be certainly a more stringent approach when it comes to looking for new players.
Yeah, and I prefer that, to be honest, because sometimes I kind of think of Newcastle's strategy to how QPR used to do it. Obviously, they didn't have the biggest budget, but I remember Tony Fernandes and Harry Redknapp would just go out and buy the kind of best player from the mid-table sides, like Chris Samba and all these different players, and they ended up going down with a crazy amount of huge contracts. But I think the key for this, and like Ian mentioned, Leicester are the best inspiration and example for every club kind of aspiring to kind of take the next step in the league. The only way these clubs can even compete with the likes of Chelsea, City, United, Liverpool, etc., is to gain an upper hand in recruitment. That's the only way they can do it, because they can't compete on a financial front, because, I mean, these clubs are owned by states pretty much. You can't compete with that. But you can compete with them in the recruitment department, and that's where you can gain the upper hand. And we saw it, like you mentioned, with Pochettino, where I don't know if they finished around sixth or seventh that season, and they played some of the best football in the league that year, and they were so impressive. And we saw that by the way the whole team kind of got dismantled in that summer, where majority of the players were going to Liverpool, United, Arsenal for multi-million pound deals. And that's where you get the best out of your club. And I think it's been neglected massively over this last 6 years, with the owner obviously wanting to pull the plug. But obviously with this new ownership, Midtjylland, they've been in the Champions League consecutively consecutively for years now. They've got a number of players who have gone to big money moves overall over Europe, to Napoli, to to Leicester, all these different clubs. And obviously Brentford, they're now in the Premier League, and they look like they're doing it way, way differently to the rest of the promoted sides, just in terms of the way they're approaching it. And obviously they didn't spend a huge amount when they came up, but they're looking to be the most effective promoted side. And that, again, is testament to the recruitment. So if this firm, obviously this is like the first step into their venture, so to say, with acquiring all these different football teams, like they're doing a house on Monopoly. It could all go to pot. They might not know what they're doing. It's kind of like their first outing into this sort of area. Obviously there are sports agencies, so they've been in it for years, but I'm talking about, you know, obtaining all these clubs and managing all these clubs. I don't know how much investment they're going to put into it, but of course it's in their own best interest. But I think that the most investment is and should go towards that recruitment area, because that's where you can gain the real upper hand in the league. And as we've seen with Leicester, as we've seen with so many other teams who've started, like West Ham, for example, all it takes is good recruitment, good investment in that area, and you can really start to gain momentum and close the gap a little bit on the better sides in the league.
Yeah, interestingly enough, the 20% that's left over is still owned by the German businesswoman Katharina Liebherr, and the 80%, as I say, is bought by Dragan Šolak, who is a media mogul in Serbia. He owns the rights to show Premier League games in the Balkan region, so he certainly has an interest in the division. There's no doubt about that. The other name who's previously involved in Brentford is Dane Ankerson, who was in charge of transfers at Brentford, and they don't seem to have gone too badly for the bees over the years. Southampton, 80% of the club has been bought for £100 million, so we'll follow that one as the weeks progress and see how that one goes. But it's back to the action on the field next here on Football Social Daily. It's the Carabao Cup semi-finals tonight, and Chelsea play Tottenham.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social. If you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss another episode of the podcast again. And if you're a fan of other sports, you can check out our offerings on the Sports Social Podcast Network. All you need to do is go to our website, sport-social.co.uk, and hit the podcast tab at the top of the page. And there is a whole roster of great podcasts for you from a range of different sports for you to get stuck into. You can also find all of those podcasts on all of your regular podcast platforms. Time to talk about the Carabao Cup semi-final, which begin tonight. Chelsea play Tottenham at Stamford Bridge this evening. Liverpool and Arsenal are due to square off as well, but Liverpool have called for that game to be postponed due to a rising number of coronavirus positives in their group. We'll talk about that more likely tomorrow, as that game could well be called off. But for now, it's Chelsea against Tottenham. We spoke about the big man earlier on in the podcast, Ian, Romelu Lukaku. Will he play tonight after he was dropped by Thomas Tuchel for one of the biggest games of the season recently against Liverpool? He's issued this apology. Do you think we'll see him back in the squad this evening against Spurs?
Well, I think it's the kind of game that you would expect to see him in an ordinary time. You know, a player who has not played recently, looking to, you know, make their way back into the first choice for the, you know, big upcoming Premier League matches that Chelsea have got on their plate. If he's done that apology, you think that he's got to be in contention, hasn't he? He's got to be in contention. This is a big match, a lot riding on it. And, you know, there's a lot riding on it more than just the local rivalry and the Premier League rivalry and the London rivalry as well. Of course, you've got the Antonio Conte and Chelsea beef still bubbling away in the background as well, which I've just been reading about. It's absolutely staggering that...
It was a big falling out, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of Daily Telegraph have subbed it down to this, right? So they've got a big, massive article on it today. But in a nutshell, if you're not sure of how much beef there is between Antonio Conte and Chelsea, he cost Chelsea 26 million quid in a divorce settlement when they fired him. So there's going to be lots of awkward... nods and glances tonight, they're predicting. The Ritz-Carlton Millennia Hotel in Singapore is where it all started to go wrong. They're on their pre-season tour. Antonio Conte, fueled by two shots of super-strength espresso, went bonkers in an interview and revealed that he wanted to sign Kyle Walker. This was shortly before he was signed to Man City for 50 million quid. On top of that, he also made clear his admiration for Harry Kane and how they should be signing him. But instead... obviously, that didn't happen either, and Chelsea had just then spaffed a record figure on Morata. He then was given the silent treatment following the cup success during the summer, in which they eventually sacked him. They offered him no congratulations and left him in the dark over his future. And in the end, it took two lawsuits against Chelsea, one for unfair dismissal, another for wages he believed he was owed under the terms of his contract, of which Conte won and cleaned him out for 26 million quid. So I'm not sure it's going to be a particularly convivial place, the director's lounge, perhaps, later on. Tonight at this where are they playing? Is it Tottenham
Stamford
at home?
Bridge.
At Stamford Bridge. Oh, blimey! Yeah, God, crikey!
Sheesh. Yeah, first time he's been back there. He's been back there since everything went down.
Yeah,
as you would say.
I just hope they've got the espresso machine on.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting you talk about Conte's approach to transfers in that interview and how things broke down, because allegedly, Joel, he's still awaiting to hear the club's January plans. There was supposed to be a meeting yesterday between Antonio Conte, Fabio Paratici, who's the managing director of football at Tottenham, and of course Daniel Levy, who'll be the man who eventually parts with the cash if there are any signings. We're already 5 days into the transfer window. Is this not a meeting that should have been happening a month ago, so Tottenham can iron out their plans for this month and who they might want to sign? It seems unusual that they've left it till, well, a week into the window to have any sort of talks about it.
Yeah, I just want to say, when Ian said two cups of fueled, I thought he was going to say tequila or something, where I'd be like, all right, that's fine, but just espresso. Wow, an Italian really gets off on espresso.
Oh, yes.
But no, in January, well, like you mentioned, Antonio Conte is pretty characteristic for falling out over transfers. I think that's one of the main reasons why he actually didn't go to Tottenham in the summer, just because there didn't seem to be any guarantees that he would get what he wants in terms of recruitment. It's one of the main reasons why he left Inter Milan when he had a falling out with Steven Zhang, just because they wanted to progress after winning the Scudetto, and he didn't have any funds for him to carry on that. So obviously that's why all their main stars left. That's why Lukaku's at Chelsea. That's why Conte's at Spurs now. But it will be interesting to see how Daniel Levy approaches this, because, you know, I know that they probably do have the money to actually push the boat out a little bit, but it's there's a difference between pushing the boat out and pushing the boat out to Antonio Conte's demands, because as Ian's mentioned, and I'm pretty sure that's probably true about him wanting Harry Kane and wanting all these different players, because he demands that, well, I think we saw after they got dumped out of the Europa Conference League, prior to the actual default 3-0 loss, can't remember which team it was now, but they got beat away from home, and you know, Conte was quite worried that he realised that the quality of the side isn't what he actually thought it was, and that kind of probably sent alarm bells ringing down Daniel Levy's spine, because I bet his wallet was stinging after those comments, because he knew that he'd be knocking on his door in the next month. So I think Conte, if he wants to mould this side into what he sees it can be, that's the only reason why he's took the Tottenham job. And I'm sure he will have received assurances prior to him joining that he will get players that he's looking for. Because don't forget, the moment that that isn't approved and the moment that the club don't back him, he'll leave. And there's no two ways about it. It's got a track record of it at Inter Milan, at Chelsea, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's at Tottenham, because the contract's very short. So if Daniel Levy doesn't want to back him the way he wants to be backed, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up leaving in the summer, just because the assurances weren't met, similar to how seemingly Harry Kane's assurances weren't met last summer as well. So it will be very interesting to see how it plays out. I don't expect massive transfers from Tottenham, just because as we've seen in many transfers in January, it doesn't seem to be a time where many clubs want to let go of players, and if they do, it's usually for a stupid fee or because they want to leave. It's never really a case of going for the first choice, unless it, you know, they randomly come available. So I'll be very interesting. There's a lot of gaps in that Tottenham side that need to be replaced and improved big time if Conte is to do it. But when you look at the league table with where Tottenham are as well, I mean, they're undefeated since he started, which is pretty impressive considering how poor they were under Nuno. But if he wants to go to the next level, he needs to be backed. And I don't believe that's going to be the case at Tottenham, to be honest.
Well, they're sixth at the moment in the Premier League, 33 points, just 2 points off of Arsenal in fourth, but they have played 2 games fewer than their North London rivals, which means that if they win those 2 games in hand, they could well leapfrog both West Ham and Arsenal into fourth place. Manchester United also possibly iron up one of those Champions League spots, despite the fact they're not in the greatest of form in terms of consistency across the season. So still all to play for. And when it comes to Spurs, Conte has revealed, Ian, that coronavirus or COVID-19 will have no impact on January dealings when it comes to finance. So how close are Spurs to being a top four side now that they have Conte? We talk about where they are in the league. They're 2 points off fourth with 2 games in hand. You know, they've got Conte, which is obviously an X factor for them. Are they a couple of decent signings away as well, perhaps, from being a regular top four contender again?
I mean, really, they should be top four already. You know, it's just they had a slow start to the season, of course, with Harry Kane taking forever to score a goal, and seems to have had some issues with that. But they do seem to be getting back now. And when you look at the stats again, I remember last season we were saying, you know, Son and Kane were the two sort of standout forwards in the Premier League, and you looked at the stats and they just outperformed everybody. They do seem to be getting their act together on that front again now, slowly but surely. I think they need, you know, people think that you get a new manager in and immediately everything's going to change, and we know that's actually not the case. It does take a long time, a season or two or three, before things really start to click. We know that Conte can do it. You know, he's done it in multiple countries. And we know that given the backing and given the time, he'll do the same at Tottenham. Surely he will. Because the Tottenham team isn't bad. They've got some good players. Strengthening it's always going to help. But I think they don't need to go bonkers in the transfer window. They're not doing a full rebuild here. They've got some, you know, top internationals. I think consistency is probably the most important thing for Tottenham now, and keep cracking on in the right direction. But, you know, a couple of points off it at the moment. Of course, they're top four contenders. Especially when you see Man United and teams like that and Arsenal being indifferent, and we know that they can do it on their day, but similarly they can toss it away as well. Consistency is key. Keep grinding out those 1-0 boring wins and they'll be there or thereabouts, you know, without a shadow of a doubt. I have no fear for Tottenham. I think they will be there come the end of the season.
Well, these two sides are going to be sick of the sight of each other by the end of January. They've got these two Carabao Cup games, both legs of the semi-final of the competition, of course, including the first leg, which is tonight. And then there's a Premier League game with Spurs. There's a Premier League game with Man City, which is obviously huge in the context of the title race. And then they go off to the Club World Cup in early February. They don't even know their opponents for that game yet. So where does this first leg rank, Joel, for you in terms of priorities for Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea with those fixtures in mind? It is a massive month for them.
Yeah, actually, I totally forgot about the Club World Cup. They've had to push it forward because usually it's in December, isn't it? But obviously with COVID, it's probably not allowed it. But I think Chelsea as a club in this last month, it's just not been a good time for Tuchel. And I think this is probably why the Lukaku situation has just tipped him over the edge a little bit, because, like you mentioned, they're not in the best form in the league at the moment. It all stemmed from that Manchester United draw at home in November, and they've just not really been able to regain that really amazing form that they started to produce at the start of the season. And then obviously when you have your £100 million striker flirting with an Italian journalist, not actually with the journalist, I don't know if that was his if that was his agenda, but with the club, then, you know, there's problems. And when you mentioned the games coming up, obviously you've got Tottenham in the Carabao Cup, then you've got Chelsea at home, then Manchester City away, Tottenham at home. I mean, these are pivotal games for Tuchel in terms of how Chelsea's outlook to the season is going to be. Because if they, for example, get a negative result tonight, there's going to be a lot of pressure going into that Manchester City game away, where City have only lost one game at home in God knows how many games. And if City do end up winning that Premier League game, the title's gone for Chelsea. They're totally out of it. They're going to have to focus on retaining their top four position. And then they're going to need Lukaku back on side in terms of actually putting in a shift for them. Otherwise, I think the hole's just going to be dug even deeper. And I do definitely believe that if Tuchel doesn't start him tonight, then Tuchel's creating bigger problems for himself than he needs to. Because I think if he ends up leaving him out or puts him on the bench, it's needless now. It's the situation's done. He's, you know, he's had a gun to his head. He's done his hostage video and just play him. So I don't know what more do you want to do, dangle him like outside a swimming pool or something and plead him
like
to death.
Like Michael Jackson with that baby over the balcony.
Yeah, but you might need some weightlifters to get Lukaku
yeah,
over there.
Yeah, you'd struggle to hold Lukaku for sure.
Yeah, but I think it's difficult.
Come on then, just to finish off the podcast, if we're all Thomas Tuchel, let's close our eyes, put a baseball cap on and put a Chelsea coat on and pretend we're Thomas Tuchel. What order are we putting these in order of importance? What do you reckon, Ian? The games with Spurs in the Premier League, the games with Spurs in the Carabao, the game with Man City, and then the Club World Cup. So you're talking four different occasions. What's the order? What's the order in terms of importance for you?
I think the Club World Cup is probably more important to fans than it is for the club. You know, I think it's a bit of a novelty, isn't it? A bonus. It's nice
to
win it.
Charity Shield,
exactly. It's the international charity shield, basically. And whilst it's nice to have and say we're world champions, it doesn't really count for much, does it? Because, you know, it's nobody really gets that excited about it. It doesn't draw massive viewing figures. I think the Premier League surely has got to be the first concern. That's the big one. And well, that and the Champions League surely are the main priorities for Chelsea. I think everything else is nice to have, but if you don't have it, then well, it's no big shakes. Well, as we've seen, you know, winning the FA Cup doesn't actually save you at Chelsea, as Conte can verify. So
there'll be many people listening to this podcast who'll be shaking their head and tutting, whether they're listening on the tube, on the tram, or just at home. And they'll be going, well, actually, Niall, the most important game is the next one. And that game is tonight against Tottenham in the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup. It's the first leg. We don't know whether Lukaku will play, but whatever happens this evening, we'll talk about it on tomorrow's Football Social Daily. That's it from us today. Ian, Joel, thanks for your company. I'll leave you to go off and devise some New Year's resolutions and see if they last longer than 3 days. That's it from us. We'll catch you next time.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.